Our next case this morning is Howard against the United States. Mr. Hanna.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ronald Hanna. I've been appointed amicus curiae for Dianco Howard in case number 02-1024. The issue in Howard's case is analogous to that of Edward Poynter's case in 02-1285, but Mr. Poynter's counsel was discharged after his persistence to proceed pro se. For oral argument purposes, this case has also been consolidated with 02-2283 U.S. versus Alcala, Mr. Alcala being represented by Andrew McGowan of the Federal Public Defender's Office. We've reviewed these cases together and found the arguments to be substantially different, so we do intend to take our own individual time to argue them separately. My client, Mr. Howard, was convicted of bank robbery in 1993 and was also convicted of using and carrying a firearm during a crime of violence, section 924 violation. His offense level for the robbery was also enhanced pursuant to sentencing guidelines because of the use of the firearm. The underlying problem in this case is that of double counting. After Howard was sentenced, the commission enacted Amendment 489 to prohibit the application of any such enhancement for the firearm where there is a separate conviction for 924C. However, 489 was not made retroactive in 1993. Amendment 599 was then enacted in 2000 and reiterated and clarified the prescription against any enhancement. 599 was made retroactive but did not specifically reiterate the section 489 that had previously been amended. Howard's success on appeal depends on whether this court finds that Amendment 599 can be read in conjunction with 489 or that 599 implicitly incorporates 489 into its provisions. The fact that 489 is not retroactive is immaterial in this case because the Sentencing Commission has the discretion at any time to decide when an amended section should be retroactive. And it's our suggestion...
But 489 is not in the list in 1B1.10C.
It is not, Your Honor.
You could put it there even today, I assume, but...
They could, but it's...
But it's not there now.
It is not there now, Your Honor. But it's our contention that that is a separate issue that the commission addresses under a separate statute when to make any particular section retroactive. And there's no legislative history to look at here whether the commission intended for 599 to encompass 489, so we need to look at just general conception of reading and
599 is pretty clearly a clarification, though, isn't it? It just extends the principle to relevant conduct, doesn't it?
It does, Your Honor. It's specifically, it's clarifying a dispute among circuits as to whether or not the enhancer should apply in circumstances of relevant conduct. But there's no indication that the commission intended to only make part of the same application note to be retroactive. They are in the same paragraph under what I believe is application note number 2, but when I reviewed this case, I seem to recall it falling under weapons enhancements, paragraph 4. So physical proximity, I suppose, only goes so far, Your Honor, but there's no suggestion that previous amendments to the same commentary should be ignored. To read the, as the government...
Why should it incorporate 489, which is obviously a substantive change? And 599 is a clarification, and that's why it's retroactive, I suppose.
Yes, Your Honor. But to read as the government suggests would indicate that the commission intended to treat two groups of people that are similarly situated differently. Those who've suffered double counting as a result of relevant conduct, and those who have experienced double counting in the likes of the situation of that of my client. And the purpose of 599 specifically was to avoid unwarranted disparity in the application of 2K2.4. Howard's reading of retroactivity served that purpose to a certain extent, at least where you have two categories of people that are similarly situated. If the commission decided at some point in time that the purpose of the amendment, in order to be carried out, needed to be held retroactive, then it should have the discretion to do that at any such time. It's therefore our contention that Howard should be entitled to a remand to consider whether a sentence should be reduced. In that regard, a remand is necessary to allow the district court to make a discretionary decision because, at least as far as 49 is concerned, it invites a departure and uses the word may, making it discretionary and to the sound discretion of the court of whether that would be appropriate under the circumstances. It would be inappropriate to assume that the district court would have departed from the new lower guideline range. And it makes a significant difference in this case, Your Honor. 30 months, I believe, for Mr. Howard. Sentencing guideline range. His new range would be from 123 to 138 months versus the 168 months that he was ultimately sentenced to. If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve my time for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Hanna. Mr. McGowan.
Thank you, Your Honor. Court, counsel, Andrew McGowan for the Federal Public Defender's Office on behalf of Mr. Alcala. In Mr. Alcala's case, he's appealing the district court's denial of his motion to be resentenced based on the Sentencing Commission's amendment in 599, which we believe changed significantly the sentencing guidelines that he should have been subjected to based on his two convictions, one for a 924C count with the underlying event being kidnapping, where he received a 60-month consecutive sentence, and the other for a conviction for extortion, which is considered relevant conduct to the 924C conviction. The enhancement of the extortion sentence in Mr. Alcala's case were increased because of events that included his use of a gun, including express threat of bodily injury or death, ability to carry out threat, infliction of bodily injury, and abduction by gunpoint. Those were all performed with a gun. And it's our contention when the Sentencing Commission changed the guidelines to include relevant conduct and suggested to the courts that they must, when combining two different offenses, one for a 924C and one for an underlying offense, instructed the court to not apply any specific offense characteristics for possession, brandishing, use, or discharge of a firearm when determining the underlying offense, including relevant conduct. I would use as an example in this case the bodily injury. The bodily injury was to a woman who was struck twice by a gun that Mr. Alcala was using. The Supreme Court in Bailey specifically listed striking somebody with a gun as a possible basis for using a gun. And we believe that the Sentencing Commission believes that the 60-month...
Counsel, I'm not sure how your client is affected by Amendment 599, because it talks about those aspects of relevant conduct that involve that deal with substantially the same harm as a felon in possession. Using a gun as a bludgeon, for example, to pistol whip somebody, doesn't seem to me substantially the same harm as the normal felon in possession use. Why would it apply here at all?
I believe it applies here because of the guideline's specific words that any kind of use of a weapon should not be used to increase somebody's sentence. And the way I believe that this should work out in district courts is that there should be a determination by the district court of what the harm is. In that case, there's two different harms, I would argue, or I am arguing, one of which is that the possession of the firearm pursuant to this other activity hurt somebody. Okay, so you've got the hurt and you've got the use of the weapon. Well, the guideline specifically says you can't use an adjustment if it's use of the weapon or if it's the substantially the same harm. So there's a determination of whether it's substantially the same harm to be made. I believe that's best made at the district court.
Isn't that an argument you could have made absent Amendment 599? It could have been made originally.
The government's certainly arguing that, Your Honor, and I don't believe that's the case. The case with 599 specifically says...
Your client was sentenced after 489.
Yes, he was, Your Honor.
Okay.
599 specifically included relevant conduct because of the split in circuit.
Really has nothing to do with what you're arguing, does it? Relevant conduct?
Yes, it actually does. It's because of what he was sentenced to based on the convictions. He pled guilty to a 924C count, the underlying event, which was kidnapping. He also pled to conspiracy to... it was not the underlying conviction for kidnapping. It was another offense. So therefore, it's got to be considered relevant conduct. Now, some courts would have used the adjustments all the way on the solicitation, but not the solicitation. It's for the other offense. They would have used all of them. Now, in this case, the district court did not use the six-level adjustment because he thought it would be double counting, impermissible double counting, which is another factor for this court to consider in many other cases. But in this case, the Sentencing Commission has sort of determined what is impermissible double counting, and it's using the words use, brandish, or possession of a firearm. And because there are these two, all of these offenses were committed with a firearm, all of these relevant conduct specific offense characteristics were used, a firearm was used in them. We believe that the 599 does affect it because it's relevant conduct. It certainly, it would have been possibly something he could have raised before and he could have lost. It's now something that's clearly something he can argue. And I believe that that's significant. The fact that the Sentencing Commission made it retroactive, I believe, is an indication that while they say it's clarifying, some courts, especially the courts that they're agreeing with, may think otherwise. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Bellin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Daniel Bella, arguing the case on behalf of the government. Amendment 599 expands or at least further defines situations in which Sentencing Guideline 2K2.4 applies. But the simple response to Mr. Arcala in this case is that the district court applied Sentencing Guideline 2K2.4 here. So Amendment 599 is of no help to the defendant. Conducting further analysis of Amendment 599, looking at what it was intended to apply for, it was not intended to apply to Mr. Arcala's case and does not apply to it. If we examine Amendment 599, there are two parts to it that are new. One part prohibits holding a defendant accountable for firearms enhancements because one firearm, and also holding the defendant accountable under 924C because of a different firearm, either used in the same offense by a co-defendant or used by the defendant in another offense that is taken into account at sentencing as relevant conduct. And the example given by the amendment is a drug offense. If there's a continuing drug offense and the defendant used one gun on one date, one gun on another date, you can't hit him with a gun enhancement under the guidelines and also punish them under 924C. That would be double punishment according to the amendment. That's not the case we have here. The other part of Amendment 599 that is new is that the amendment instructs that where there is a 924C conviction, you should not apply an enhancement for possession of the same firearm in connection with another felony offense. And it refers to the Flannery case, which is an example of what the Sentencing Commission was thinking of here. In the Flannery case, there was a conviction of a defendant for drug trafficking, also for a felony in possession of a firearm, and also for a 924C conviction in connection with the drug trafficking. The district court punished the defendant for being a felon in possession and enhanced that sentence because the defendant possessed a gun in connection with another offense, that is, the drug trafficking offense. The defendant also was hit with a 924C sentence for possessing the gun in connection with the drug trafficking offense. And the court found that was double counting. Again, that's not the case we have here. The commentary to Amendment 599 does not discuss whether 2K2.4 should apply to additional specific offense characteristics, which I think is what Arcala is arguing here. Additional specific offense characteristics than previously have been the case. The commentary to Amendment 599 discusses to which offenses 2K2.4 should apply. It applies to offenses, not to additional specific offense characteristics. It particularly discusses the use of different guns in an offense, as I described, and it particularly discusses enhancements for use of a firearm in connection with another offense, which I also described. The language regarding specific offense characteristics in the amendment is identical to the language before. The amendment starts off by saying, don't apply enhancement for possession, brandishing, use, or discharge of a firearm in the face of a 924C conviction. And in Alcala's case, no enhancements were applied for any of those specific offense characteristics. In fact, specifically, the district court refused to apply an enhancement for otherwise using a weapon, in this case, striking someone with a weapon. The district court did apply an enhancement for inflicting injury upon a victim, and the ability to do that is well recognized by other courts, as the government points out in its brief. The enhancements the defendant complains of are not for possession, brandishing, use, or discharge of a firearm, which is prohibited by 2K2.4, but for other types of conduct: threatening bodily injury, inflicting bodily injury, abducting a victim. Can you apply these enhancements and also apply a 924C conviction? I think the answer is yes, and 599 doesn't change that. The defendant talks about the Bailey case, and the Bailey case didn't look at specific offense characteristics. It tried to define what active employment of a firearm is. And the court in Bailey said that striking is one of the things that that's encompassed by the phrase active employment of a firearm. But the pre-sentence investigation in this case specifically declined to apply an enhancement for striking the victim with a firearm. The PSI determined that the act of striking a victim with a firearm was fell under specific offense characteristics, otherwise using a weapon. And so the enhancement was not applied because of the 924C conviction. And that's what I was talking about when I said the court did apply, specifically apply 2K2.4. The court did, however, impose enhancements for inflicting bodily injury. There the court was punishing Alcala not for use of a weapon, not for the use of a weapon striking at somebody, but for the injury that resulted from the defendant's action. And courts have said that that's a separate specific offense characteristic, a separate enhancement from otherwise using a weapon. The court applied 2K2.4 here, and the defendant, therefore, is entitled to no other relief. All the enhancements that were applied are permitted under Amendment 599. It doesn't change the ability of the courts to apply those enhancements in the face of a 924C conviction. There is one error that the government discusses in its brief, and that I don't think that is a guideline enhancement that was set out in the sentencing guideline applicable to this case as an either or. It said that you can either apply an enhancement for otherwise using a weapon or for showing an ability to carry out a threat. And the government acknowledges that that if you couldn't apply the one enhancement for otherwise using a weapon in the face of a 924C conviction, then you shouldn't be able to apply the other. And that's set forth in the closing pages of the government's brief.
I have a little difficulty understanding your position there. Could you explain that again? Why this is an error?
Well, it's something that is rather obscure, and nobody called it at the sentencing hearings. Nobody called it at post-conviction relief proceedings, and the government noticed it only on preparing the brief.
It is not. Can't be enforced now since it wasn't the subject of an appeal. What would be our authority to make any change now? It's not Amendment 599.
Your Honor,
no other authority to make changes.
The government struggled with that. This case came up initially on a pro se brief by the appellant, and the government noted that problem in a footnote, and also noted that time deadlines have passed for the defendant to complain of it in a 2255 proceeding. And
you couldn't complain about it in a 2255 proceeding anyway, because guideline errors cannot be raised under 2255. That's the law of this circuit. It's just totally outside court's authority to make changes. There's no enduring authority to correct errors. That's a fundamental change in the 1984 statute.
I would agree with the court. I was less troubled having found that and having found no way to correct it. So I did want to bring it to the court's attention. I did in a footnote in the government's original brief and did again in the closing pages of this brief. If there are no further questions about the Alcala appeal, there are two consolidated appeals here. Steve Ingraham, Assistant U.S. Attorney from the Eastern District of Wisconsin, is here to answer any questions the court might have. We agreed that I should take up the first period of time because we thought the Alcala appeal more squarely raised the Amendment 599 issue.
Mm-hmm.
If the court has any questions, Mr. Ingraham, I can introduce him now.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Steve Ingram. I'm with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, as an Assistant United States Attorney. Your Honors, I respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's denial of the motions for reduction of sentence by Mr. Poynter and Mr. Howard. There are three main points I'd like to make. First of all, there was no double counting for either Mr. Poynter or Mr. Howard at the time that they were sentenced. Each man was sentenced before Amendment 489 took effect in November of 1993, but each man was sentenced according to rules in place at the time which recognized the potential for double counting, and so the district judge properly sentenced them, recognizing the double counting problem and properly caring for it. The second point is that Amendment 599 did not apply to either Mr. Howard or Mr. Poynter. As has been indicated, Amendment 599 was a clarification that clarified the guideline in effect at the time. And it simply does not apply, and nor was it suggested by their briefs that it applied to their cases. And then finally, Your Honors, there should not be a remand in this case because there should not be a remand for the district judge to consider an upward departure. The district judge would, in all likelihood, impose the same sentence. He could impose the same sentence on a remand, and no reason has been given why the district court would not impose an upward departure in this case in order to remove the disparity that would exist. There's no reason why the district court would, in effect, want to reward either Mr. Poynter or Mr. Howard for being convicted also of a 924C count. And if the district court declined to do an upward departure, that is exactly what the district court would be doing. So there is really no need to remand this case for the same sentence to be imposed. Your Honors, unless there are questions, I would rest on my brief. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Hanna?
I would agree that the court that 1993 did recognize the potential for double counting, but I don't believe that the process that it went through did fix the problem, which is probably why there was an Amendment 489 on the same year. There was double counting to the extent of 30 months in this case, not to the complete prejudice of a 7-level enhancement, but Mr. Howard's sentence was, he was given the 60 months for the use of the gun for the 924C, and for the same conduct, the possession of the weapon, his conduct, his offense level for the bank robbery was enhanced to some extent. So, in effect, there is double counting in this situation. And I would suggest that a remand would be proper under circumstances where the court's ability to upward depart pursuant to 489 would be discretionary.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Hanna. Mr. McGowan?
Your Honor, very briefly, I would like to point out to the court, one of the court's questions to me was essentially, why, if he didn't raise these issues on appeal before, would Mr. Alcala be able to raise them now? I would suggest that the rules for when somebody can bring an amendment that affects them that's been made retroactive are not so clear, and that to the effect that we're arguing, of course, that his relevant conduct is a significant difference, and that in some cases, some courts may find that that's a substantive change anyway, going along with the guidelines Sentencing Commission is making it retroactive. I'd also like to comment just very briefly on the government's suggested error. It is one of the guidelines that Mr. Alcala originally raised in his motion, to the extent that he raised any of these in his motion. And it is the same requested relief that we're asking for in the first place. To the extent that the court doesn't believe it can give us complete relief, we would certainly request the court consider the partial relief, including the government's suggested error. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, counsel. And Mr. Hanna, the court particularly wants to thank you for appearing as amicus curiae and the assistance you've been to us. So thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.